Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Listening to WBHM Digital Broadcasting out of Birmingham, Alabama. The opinions of hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the opinion of this network.
You are listening to WBHM Digital Broadcasting, the best in paranormal talk, only on Paranormal Experience Radio. Broadcasting live out of Birmingham, Alabama. This is Ghost Talk with 187 PI. Sit back and prepare yourselves for an adventure into the paranormal world with host Shelley Robertson and 187 PI research team. Ghost Talk is broadcasting live from Ohio's most haunted jail. Learn about their ongoing research at the jail and abroad, investigation techniques, and their personal encounters. Here is your host of Ghost Talk and 187 PI founder, Shelley Robertson.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Ghost Talk Radio. With me is your host, Shelley Robertson. And tonight we're broadcasting live from Ohio's most haunted jail, the old Paulding Jail, right here in Paulding, Ohio. And tonight, I have such an interesting show planned for you. I'm going to, take you all on a journey to some of the most haunted places in Indonesia. And I got a short disclaimer, okay, folks, before we get started. Many of the places that I will be featuring in tonight's broadcast are places that are still standing and places that you could visit. And with that being said, for my listeners in Indonesia and all my listening friends not there who may have, a bucket list, maybe you're going to go visit Indonesia, please make sure you're mindful of posted operating hours of the locations, as some of them give tours. And please be respectful of property owners by getting permission before you start poking around on properties. Remember, trespassing is against the law, and punishments may be pretty severe in foreign localities, okay? So now that we've got that out of the way, let's talk a little bit about Indonesia, shall we? Of course, it's a country in Asia, and Indonesia, officially the Republic of Indonesia, is a country in Southeast Asia, and it's between the Indian and Pacific Oceans. And it consists of over 17,000 islands. That's a lot, right? Including Sumatra, Java, parts of Borneo and New Guinea. And Indonesia is the world's largest island country, and it's the 14th largest country by area at almost 736,000 square miles. So that's pretty big, right? It's got about 270 million people. Indonesia is the world's fourth most populous country and the most populous of a Muslim majority country, okay? So most of them are Muslims. And Java is the world's most populous island, and it's home to more than half of the country's entire population. So that just goes to, explain to you the mass and the size of these island territories, right? Now, Indonesia It's a presidential republic with an elected legislature, and it has 34 provinces, of which 5 have special status. The country's capital is Jakarta, and it's the world's second largest, most populous urban area. And Indonesia shares land borders with New Guinea, the eastern part of Malaysia, as well as maritime borders with Singapore, Vietnam, Thailand, Philippines, Australia, and India, okay? Despite its large population, you know, it's got vast areas of wilderness that support one of the world's highest levels of biodiversity. So the most populous, yet, you know, huge wilderness area. So that must mean the people are, you know, located in certain areas, and lots of them in certain areas. The local rulers there, they gradually like kind of absorbed foreign influences from early centuries, and Hindu and Buddhist kingdoms flourished, all right? Now, when the Dutch were the foremost colonial power for much of their 350-year presence in the islands, the concept of Indonesia as a nation state, it emerged in the early 20th century. Now, culminating later in the proclamation of Indonesia independence in 1945, right? So it wasn't until about 1949 that the Dutch recognized Indonesia's sovereignty following an armed and diplomatic conflict between the two. So they had, you know, a little tussle there, right? Now there's fossilized remains of Homo erectus, popularly known as the Java Man, which suggests the Indonesian islands was inhabited about 2 million to 500,000 years ago. Homo sapiens reached the region at about 43,000 BCE, and the first Europeans arrived in the islands in 1512 when Portuguese traders led by this fella named Francisco Cerro, he sought to monopolize sources of nutmeg and cloves and, you know, peppers in the islands, right? Now, Dutch and British traders followed in 1602, and the Dutch established the Dutch East India Company, and that became the dominant European power for almost 200 years. And this company was dissolved in 1800 following bankruptcy, and the Netherlands established the Dutch East Indies as a nationalized colony. So then you have later, a little bit later, the Japanese invasion and subsequent occupation during World War II. That ended the Dutch rule, and it encouraged the previously suppressed independent movement, right? 2 days after surrender of Japan in August of 1945, this fella named Sukarno, had influential nationalist leaders with him, and they proclaimed independence for Indonesia, and they were appointed president and vice president, respectively, of this fella. Now, the Netherlands, they attempted to reestablish their rule, and they had an armed diplomatic struggle, which ended in December of 1949 when the Dutch formally recognized Indonesia, recognized their independence in the face of international pressure, and they transferred sovereignty to the United States of Indonesia. Now, despite extraordinary political and social, you know, divisions, Indonesia on the whole, they found unity in their fight for their independence. And I think that, you know, we can understand that here in our country, you know, our independence, right? Now, Indonesia lies along the equator, all right? And its climate tends to be relatively, you know, even year round. They have two seasons, a wet season and a dry season, with no extreme, you know, extreme climate changes of summer or winter. Okay. And for most of Indonesia, the dry season falls between May and October, with the wet season between November and April. Now, in 2018, which is more recent, forests covered approximately 49% of the country's land area. And that was down from 87% in 1950. So their forests are getting smaller, right? And that's because starting in the 1970s, continuing up to the present day, log production, various plantations, and agriculture have been responsible for much of the deforestation in Indonesia. Most recently, this has been driven mostly by the palm oil industry. And we've heard about stuff with the palm oil industry in other locations, not only Indonesia, but I think it's destroying things personally. So that was just a little bit and a very brief history of Indonesia. And believe me, there is a ton more to talk about when you consider all the years and some of the political struggles and some of their crop changes. And there's just a lot of history there. And I've only covered just your basic little tidbits tonight. So now let's get on to spooky stuff, shall we? That's what we really want to hear about, right? Some of the most haunted places in Indonesia. Now, superstitions, okay, it's really a part of the daily conversation and chit-chat of Indonesians, even in the metropolitan area of Jakarta. Like, in Indonesia, every Thursday night, local television stations, they are showing, you know, all kinds of tales of horror, from horror movies to supernatural movies, supernatural game shows, ghost stories, and all things like that, because this fascinates the people of Indonesia, kind of like it does around here. I mean, look at all of the, you know, horror flicks we have and all of the ghost hunting shows that we have. It's much the same there, okay? And they are really, areas of Indonesia are really, really in tune with some of the local traditions, some of the local legends and lore and superstition. And it's very fascinating. And I'm only going to be able to talk about a few of those tonight, but let me tell you, when you get time on your own, do some reading about it. You will find it so very interesting, right? So all of this, it's not surprising, right? Just like here, that the supernatural industry has become a source of income for many, many people. Like all the shamans, they are offering service. And there's all these supernatural tours of all these haunted locations, just making millions of dollars, right? And, you know, it's really been appealing to all segments of society there. And I'm sure you can guess why. Because not only is it a very interesting subject, but there's lots of haunted places there. So, you know, they're doing just what anyone would do if they found a place to be haunted and it's got a lot of evidence, they're sharing it, right? So let's start our travels, shall we? And our first stop is going to bring us to the land of the living dead in Tana Turhana, South Sulawesi. And this is located in the mountainous islands of South Sulawesi, and it's deep in the heart of lush jungles of eastern Indonesia. And Tana Turhana is known as the land of heavenly kings, and they're renowned worldwide for their beautiful tropical climate. They harvest just great Arabica coffee and cocoa beans, and their bizarre funeral rites. And so this is going to be very interesting for you to hear if you don't already know about it. The people of Turhana, they adhere to cultural guidelines that set their lives constantly revolving around death, okay? And following in the traditions of their ancestors, funerals, they supersede in both expense and extravagance, even over marriages, birthdays, and in a way, they are ongoing year-round holidays, okay? And the Turhan see death as not an event to be mourned, but as a celebrated transition to their, you know, ancestral resting place. In fact, they do not even view members of their community as being dead until their public funeral has been completed. Now, prior to the ceremony, once an individual's biological life has ended, okay, their body is mummified and it's kept in a special room within the home. And there the family continues to speak and interact with the decaying body, including symbolically, mind you, feeding and caring for it. All right. During this time, the deceased is considered to be sick or asleep. And the funeral service can occur years after death as the family saves money for the funeral. And you're going to be like, okay, so how much can this funeral cost, right? Well, it's so much that sometimes it's even at the expense of the family of living in poverty, okay? One of the most important aspects of the funeral is a painted bamboo or wooden effigy made in the exact likeness of the deceased. Now, the Turhans, they believe that this wooden statue hosts part of the soul of their loved one. And this wooden statue is carried alongside the body through the village in a colorful parade procession that can be upwards of a mile long and last for many hours, okay? Which is just unbelievable, right? Now, all the members of the community, up to thousands of people, mind you, may attend these joyous multi-day or even multi-week events. Rituals for those in attendance include joining hands in prayer, dancing and singing songs to celebrate the life of the deceased, and animal sacrifices, okay? The meat of these animal sacrifices is divided among the mourners. And most important sacrifice made during the ceremony is that of the water buffalo. That's the most important sacrifice. And the people believe that this water buffalo sacrifice, it transports the soul of the departed to the afterlife. Very interesting, right? Now, after this very extravagant funeral takes place, and after it's been completed, the body is then, you know, interred into a mausoleum or a tomb built into the face of limestone cliff walls, or, you know, a tomb carved in rocks or inside of a hollowed out tree, or maybe hanged from a mountain in a bamboo frame. Okay. So whatever it may be, this wooden statue that is made in their likeness. It stands silent, watching over the final resting place and the family, okay? And in exchange for this statue's service, gifts such as beer and candy and money are regularly left with this wooden statue. That is crazy, right? And the most bizarre thing of this whole story will be coming up right after this short break. You are listening to Ghost Talk Radio on WBHM-DB.
Warning, the following message does not necessarily reflect the views of WBHMDB or its hosts, guests, listeners, or of any functioning adult in general. In fact, Frank should probably seek professional help. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi there, Frank Lee here. I thought that I would spend a few moments telling you about the positivity from the network here. The overall message of para-unity and happiness and how everyone here wants to get along with everyone out there and how everything is just wonderful. Wait, cat's not looking. Okay, I've got something to really tell you.
So I'm going to tell you what's really going on. Honestly, all that being nice and positive crap was kind of hurting my soul, as dark as it is. So, what's really happening? You see it all the time. Everybody and their brother out there has a paranormal team because they watched a couple of episodes of Ghost Hunters or some crap like that. So they go and they spend half their mortgage payment on tools and things that light up that they don't understand. And then the next logical step after buying matching black t-shirts and posing like 90s rappers for their Facebook page is to, of course, have their own podcast. Well, you know what? You're not going to find that crap here. What we have here at WBHM Digital Broadcasting is the best host, the best guest, bringing you real information. All of the hosts here on this network know their stuff. They are the people who have been out there doing the work, doing actual research. And no, by research, I don't mean binge watching some kind of cheesy TV show on Netflix. I mean reading books. I mean out in the field doing the legwork. And who are they interviewing on their shows? They're bringing you the people they have learned from. They're bringing you the best in the field, covering all kinds of topics from UFOs and aliens to Bigfoot to cryptozoology to ghosts to anything you can think of a bit strange and unexplained. It is here, and you're going to get the best information here. So stay tuned to WBHM Digital Broadcasting. Don't go anywhere. Speaking of going somewhere, I've got to go before my mic gets cut. We'll see you there on WBHM DB.
Welcome back to Ghost Talk Radio with me as your host, Shelley Robertson. And if you missed the first part of the show, no worries, folks. You can listen to the full show archive on Spreaker, Google Play, iTunes, iHeartRadio, plus many other platforms. If you're a member, we're probably there. So before the break, I'm talking about this group of islands, right? In the Tana Turana of South Sulawesi, Indonesia. And I'm talking about, you know, how they do their funerals. And the next part of this is probably the most amazing of all. And just to get some kind of, you know, concept of the cost of these funerals. The populace of the area, usually their yearly wage, okay, let's just consider this. Their yearly wage is like $12,500. Okay, that's not a lot. That's very little. And the cost of these funerals, minimally, is over $100,000. Okay. And some of them are even more than that. And sometimes why it takes years for them to have the funeral is the family has to have the money in full before the funeral can take place. So, as you can see, let's say your parents died and they didn't have their money saved for their funeral. You're going to hold their dead body until you have enough money. Basically, that's how it works out. Think about that for a moment. Crazy, right? That is how important these funerals for their people are. Now, the strangest aspect of this culture is an event called the Manene. And during this Manene, okay, corpses are exhumed from the grave and they are clean and dressed in new clothing. If needed, maintenance is conducted on their crypt. Their casket is repaired or replaced. And the mummified remains, at this point, they are freshened up and they are paraded through town where relatives can take pictures and videos with their family members who have passed away. Now, while some may see this practice here as macabre or kind of gross, these people look at it as a powerfully devotional act, you know, of basically faith and love, something that just doesn't, you know, cease with death, okay? It still carries on. And with that said, after several years of internment, they say that the dead would return on occasion to walk among the living, okay? And in the past, it was even alleged that there were civil wars in the area that were conducted entirely of armies of the undead. The folklore of these folks holds myths of the walking dead as part of their rich cultural fabric, and they insist that the aforementioned phenomena can actually be performed with black magic rituals, okay? And knowledge of these rituals is considered, you know, not really appropriate for modern society. So there's been many reports of this place being truly haunted, right, with folks seeing apparitions, even some apparitions tending burial sites, okay? So, and also, this area, believe it or not, and prior to researching this, I did not know about this place, but it's quite a tourist attraction for people to come and witness some of these funeral festivities and parades. And if you do go there, I mean, even some of them are listed on government websites that'll let you know funeral of so-and-so, you know what I mean? And if you go and attend, you know, you're a tourist, you show up and you want to attend, you're supposed to bring gifts of, you know, beer or food or some kind of trinket and even cigarettes to the deceased. So keep that in mind. If you go, you need to show up bearing gifts, okay? This next place we're going to visit is an old school in Tunggu Complex in Malang. And this is lodged in the city center of Malang. And it's a piece of history that was once the pride of the city. And it underwent an unexpected turn of events during the final moments of World War II, leaving behind, you know, terrible memories and unanswered questions, okay? Now, there were three schools in the vicinity, and all three of them was used as concentration camps by the Japanese troops, you know, who made a system of crawl spaces connecting them to a train station and to the governor's office. Okay, so they made these little tunnels and crawl spaces, connected everything up. And legend says that two high schoolers, they attempted to explore the tunnels, and that ended gruesomely. And after one student rushed back, he was screaming and he was really too traumatized to speak. The other student was found a couple of weeks later in a strange train station, and he was in a very disturbed state. So whatever happened to them under there and whatever they saw, it was very traumatic. And another oddity that remains unanswered is what appears to be the blood stains on the floors in several buildings. And they're mostly found randomly splattered on floors. And this is in all three schools. And what is even more ambiguous is that every attempt to get rid of them, either by replacing the tiles or laying another one on top of it, it just proves to be unsuccessful. And, you know, sometimes even some of the workers fall ill after trying to complete these jobs of getting rid of these bloody looking floor tiles. Now, the Tengu Hall is believed to be the most sinister building in the complex. And although the bloodstains have been concealed after the installation of wood floorboards, and mind you, they even put a layer of sand underneath these wood floorboards. And anyways, the hall is restricted to visitors at night. You know, they don't want anybody going in there at night. And they say this is to avoid seeing the headless ghosts of soldiers that appear in that area of at night. So that's why they don't let people in there at night. Now, next, we're going to go on to the Bedugul Tamarin Rikishri Hotel, and that's in Bali. And it's up in the mountains of Bali, and it's on the way to the iconic Bedugul Lake. And what's weird about it is something is stirring in the fog there. And it's a ghost story that some two decades in the making, and it's just, you know, riddled with horrors. Some say the Ghost Palace Hotel, which is what they call this place, it was constructed, perched on a hillside, and it was built by a fella named Tommy Suharto. And others say it was a crooked developer who tried to curse his rivals out of the way. Now, this hotel is totally empty, you know, and they say that if you're brave enough to explore the place, you'll likely see the wandering spirits of victims, either laborers that were crushed, you know, or competitors who were cursed to horrible deaths. You know, and many ghosts have been spotted here as well. And like I said, this hotel has never been open to the public. And they say, though, it already has a full house every single night of spirits that haunt the place. So if you would like to check that out for yourself, I do think it's quite, you know, just fascinating that this huge place was built and it never come to pass to open to the public because so many tragedies have happened there, you know, just unbelievable, right? Next, we're going to travel on to, you know, a place in Yogyakarta, and we're going to go to Mount Merapi. And this place is governed by the Keraton. And Mount Merapi is also believed to be a kingdom of its own, a kingdom unseen to human eyes, mind you. Now, this mount here, it's predicted to erupt like every 2 to 5 years, right? And it's one of the most active volcanoes in the world today. And it sits almost 300 meters above sea level. And it's a compound of just breathtaking sights of nature where lots and lots and thousands of people flock, you know, every year from all around the world to come see this place, okay? Now, beyond what your eyes can see, the residents of the surrounding area, they believe that Mount Merapi is the kingdom of spirits who govern the mountains, from fertilizing the land, its weather, and ultimately its eruptions. So these spirits here control everything. Excuse me. And instead of fearing these spirits, local residents honor their presence by keeping its environment protected and respecting their space, right? And that's what I always say to you, even in today, even being here at this haunted place, respect is a big thing, right? So this has been, this volcano has been one place that's become a favorite to those willing to experience the supernatural firsthand, right? And sitting right below the summit, this area is often used as camping grounds by hikers, you know, in hoping to catch the most beautiful sunrise there. But as they're about to doze off, the hustle and bustle of what sounds like a market fills the air, accompanied by a band of, you know, gamelans and a strong wind that plows through at night. It just ensures that the campers think twice before leaving their tents, right? So it all makes for a very spooky atmosphere. Now, in 2010, there was an eruption, and it killed more than 300 villagers, and it forced over 100,000 to evacuate their homes and farms and to abandon jobs in this sand mining, right? Because they mine sand there. And there are many reports of ghostly apparitions in this area, and they are believed to be some of the villagers who perished during the time of this eruption. Now, other mysterious hot spots on Mount Merapi, they include a bunker where two guards were baked to death during an eruption. And there is this crater that's there too. And it is also believed to be a portal into this ghostly kingdom that they believe in. And if you make it there, there's no way for you to get out. Very interesting, right? So you get stuck in this portal thing at the crater. Now, traveling on, we're going to go make a stop here at Truyan Valley, and it's also known as the Village of the Dead. And on the shores of Lake Batur, the people of the area, they neither cremate nor bury their dead. Instead, folks, their bodies are left to rot in bamboo cages under the watchful eye of a very fragrant tree. And this tree, the fragrance is so strong, it masks the smell of decay, right? So isn't that crazy? Now, once the flesh has decomposed completely, you know, under the tree, the bones of the corpses. They're stacked neatly on this platform that leads to the Truyen Temple of Death. And just so you guys know, this Temple of Death and even this platform that leads to it, it is off limits to the public. That is, you know, places kept secret. And I guess this started by a woman whose name was Leek, and she is believed to be an evil witch spirit now. So that is still kept secret, and tourists are not allowed to check it out and go there. It's been reported many times that at night you can see a woman with long dark hair digging around those cemetery platforms. So what is she doing there? Who only knows, right? Now moving on, we shall make a stop at Lubang Buaya, Jakarta. And this is a monument. This is so interesting. And this is a monument built to commemorate Indonesia's, this is just a bloody history thing, right? The Lubang Buaya is the site of this brutal murder of 7 army generals by the Communist Party in 1965, okay? And it marked a major turning point in Indonesia's governance, as the event led to President Sukarno's coup and a military overtake of the country, all right? So 25 years later, this museum was opened to educate the public about the events that took place, right? Wax-like, life-sized figures were made, and they reenact how the generals were dragged out of their homes and slaughtered. And I've seen the pictures of these and stuff, and it literally looks like there's blood where it should be, and there's, you know, it's kind of horrifying, really. And in the middle of the monument, okay, there sits a well, and this was where the mutilated bodies of the 7 generals were thrown into. They were thrown into this well. So this tragedy sparked a lot of controversy, okay, from banned propaganda films, you know, that used to be mandatory in schools, mind you, to the CIA's involvement that led to the obscured truth of what really happened. Now, that may be the reason why there's been so many reports where people hear cries, you know, and they think it's from these soldiers that can be heard from inside the well. They'll hear footsteps that echo the hallways at night. And in fact, it said that some of the clothes on display still reek, like, you know, smell of blood. Very, very interesting, right? So it's kind of like they have memorialized such a tragic event, and it's being haunted in the same way in which it happened. So that's kind of, I don't know how I like that. And with that, folks, we are going to visit the next place. And this is the most haunted place in Indonesia. The most haunted. After we come back, after this short break, you are listening to Ghost Talk Radio on WBHM-DB.
You are listening to WBHM, Digital Broadcasting, the best in paranormal talk, only on Paranormal Experience Radio, broadcasting live out of Birmingham, Alabama.
Oh, come on. I'm Southern, but... nope. That'll do. Hello, I am Kat Hobson, host of Paranormal Experience here on WBHN Digital Broadcasting out of Birmingham, Alabama. I enjoy having guests from all areas of the paranormal, from ghosts to ufology to cryptids and beyond. You'll find some of the best researchers in their fields bringing you some great information. Join me on Wednesday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern here on WBHN Digital Broadcasting.
Since 1948, Fate Magazine has brought you reports of the strange and unknown, all of them true. Fate Radio is carrying on that tradition, bringing you the unusual, macabre, strange, and bizarre. Join host Kat Hobson Sunday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on WBHM Digital Broadcasting.
Listening to WBHM Digital Broadcasting, the best in paranormal talk, only on Paranormal Experienced Radio, broadcasting live out of Birmingham, Alabama.
Welcome back to Ghost Talk Radio with me as your host, Shelley Robertson. And tonight we're talking about haunted Indonesia. And of course, you know, the show is not long enough to just like cover all of the places because there are so many places, but I'm covering tonight some of them that I think are the most interesting. And if you missed the first part of the show, no worries. You can listen to the full show archive on Spreaker, Google Play, iTunes, iHeart, or pretty much whatever platform you're at. I mean, we're even listed on Deezer. So if you want to scratch something out to my broadcast, hey, I give you permission, put a nice tune behind it, you know, whatever. Okay, so prior to the break, give you the little tease that this next place we're going to visit is the most haunted place in Indonesia, right? And we're going to travel to Lawang Sewu in Samarang, and this is the most haunted place in Indonesia. And it's also known as home to the unhappy dead ghosts, all right? Now, in the Javanese language, Lawang Sewu is translated, and it means a thousand doors, okay? Now, while this building does not really have a thousand doors, the three-story massive structure has been lined with numerous windows and doors. And the windows that they put in, they resemble doors, which give the building its name. Now, this is not simply a structure that has been deserted for several years. Rather, it presents, you know, as an icon of history and heroism, right? The Lawang Sewu, located in Samarang, is a haunted building. And it was used as a military headquarters during World War II. Now, the large building is simply, you know, not a deserted structure, but it's rather a place where many soldiers lost their lives, okay? The building became a scene for the bloody Battle of Samarang, where many soldiers were tortured and killed. Since then, this place has served as a house for many what they call vengeful spirits. Now, the construction of the main building began February 27th in 1904, and it was completed in July 1907, while the additional buildings were built in 1916 and completed in 1918. The structure consists of two colonial buildings that once represented the headquarters of the Indonesian railways during the Dutch era. Now, these structures were sparsely used and occasionally exhibits most of the railway system on view. However, the empty corridors where the clerks and engineers worked have their own interest with, you know, modern features, including stained glass and a marble staircase. So it's quite lovely. Now, wandering in the, you know, buildings at night, There's a sense of history and a chill rising from the front door to the unlit basement. Tongue-tied for a moment. Now, during the Second World War from 1942 to 1945, the Japanese occupied the building and used the dungeons for interrogation. In 1945, the building served as the Dakari. And the very next year, in 1946, it served as the headquarters of the Dutch Army. So see a lot of people trying to take over here, right? Now, popularly known as the Building of 1,000 Doors, on the account of many sections and window shapes of doors, right? That's what we went over that. This is a place of anguish and grief, okay? Though it was built for the Dutch East India Company, it was soon invaded by Japanese, who turned the basement, you know, into a prison for executing prisoners, okay? And that's what they turned the basement into. Now, the Japanese people would torture and hang people from the iron beams under the ceiling. And it's said that this place is frequented by many ghosts, many of them grief-ridden. And it's said, you know, that these ghosts will haunt anyone who stands underneath these beams. Hence, some of the tour guides, they often tell the tourists to stick together in fear that one of them wandering too far, you know, away from the group or falling into a trap, right? Because they say the ghosts put out traps and they're afraid that maybe a tourist might, you know, end up in one of those traps. And what's even scarier is the guides offer, you know, all its tourists a ritual by which they can see the ghosts. Although there's no way to like reverse the ritual, many of the tourists have often reported being creeped out by this offer. After all, who would want to live in the constant horror of seeing dead people, right? That's what they think. But there's supposedly a ritual that they do where you're able to see them. And many of the locals there, they refuse to enter this house in fear of having, you know, a ghost attaching themselves to them, right? So they warn all those who wish to visit the building to not go in. However, this never detours the visitors and the tourists. Visitors are made to wear rubber boots since the basement is filled with water. And the basement, you know, which was used as a detention center by the Japanese, you know, to capture and torture people, they would also execute these people by beheading them in the basement and letting their blood flow down the drains, okay? And, you know, they would pile up the heads in a corner down there, you know, that's horrible, right? All of the visitors have reported hearing cries and some hear screams from the basement, and pretty much all of them leave shaken by the incident. And, you know, the basement also contains this small door, which, you know, leads to a small concrete floor. And here is where Japanese would club, you know, six prisoners together and then fill the room with water, leaving the prisoners to drown. And if one happened to survive, they would have their heads cut off. Pretty brutal, huh? And, you know, the Japanese were quite brutal with their prisoners. And as a result, many of their victims continue to linger around the building, searching for their peace. The basement also contains a row of alcoves, which were used as a standing prison. 12 prisoners would be forced to stand in a small cramped area. And many of these had been reportedly turned mad as a result of being trapped in such a small enclosure. It's really unimaginable how a human mind could conjure such inhumane punishments, you know? It is just shocking what people do to other people. And, you know, it's also a little shocking that many of these ghosts still stay around there with such a tragic ending of their lives, you know? Are they seeking revenge, maybe? You know, all the deaths and the murders that have been witnessed by this building continue to just, you know, send chills down people's spines, because when they go there, they all are witnessing some sort of traumatic, haunting event, right? There's been many TV shows that have filmed here at this place, and many shows even offer rewards to anyone who manages to survive the horrors of the building if they will stay in there, right? And I don't think to date anybody's ever got one of those rewards. And that, my friends, is the most haunted place in Indonesia. So let's talk a little bit about what's coming up at the Old Paulding Jail. We do have a public ghost hunt for tomorrow night. We do have a few remaining tickets left. So if you have nothing to do tomorrow night, hop online, go on over to 187pi.com and pick you up a ticket. We also have in June, which it's posted on our website and on our Facebook page, we have Rick McCollum, founder of the Hollywood Ghost Hunters, coming to the jail. Tickets are available, so get your reservation today while we still have them. I look for those to sell out quick. Those just got posted a couple of days ago. We will be at 5 Paracons this year, so you guys will all get a chance to come and visit us live. Yay! We have a booth, and the first one of the season is Parapsycon. It's May 21st and 22nd at the Ohio State Reformatory in Ohio. So make sure you plan on attending that Paracon. It's a fantastic one, by the way. And Tri-State Ghost Hunters, they organize and put that one on. And it is such just a great place. The place has a lot of history. They have a ghost hunt you can even sign up for. They got a tour. Your ticket into the con, which is very cheap. It also includes you being able to tour the Ohio State Reformatory. So come on down, see us live there. And what's going on at our fabulous network here at WBHM-DB? Let me tell you, folks, every many nights, 8 o'clock, we've got Sunday nights, Monday nights, Thursday nights, Friday nights, 8 o'clock, you got somewhere to be. And it's right here online with us, right? Listening to our live broadcast. On Sunday nights, we have Fate Magazine Radio with host Kat Hobson. Just amazing guests, some great stories. Monday nights, we have the Paranormal Pride Show with host Denise Pridemore. And she has got some great guests and some fantastic, you know, shows. And then, of course, we've got our signature show for the station, which is Paranormal Experience with show host Kat Hobson. That's Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. And of course, you're already here with me on Friday night, so make a plan. They're all great shows. And so this ends my hour with you all, and I want to take a moment to thank you all for taking time out of your busy schedules to listen to my live broadcast. I wish you all a great weekend. Until next time, good night, friends.
You are listening to WBHM, Digital Broadcasting, the best in paranormal talk, only on Paranormal Experience Radio, broadcasting live out of Birmingham, Alabama.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.